It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
Creatures who feast upon the flesh of their victims.
I ate his liver with some fava beans.
Soylent Green. Nice made out of people.
Feeding time. I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren. And we are the Rant Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rant Macabre, please visit fangoria.com. So welcome to another Lunch Hour Review. This one I'm very excited about. First, we're going to cover Blackula.
Yay, which I'm glad you finally watched.
And then we're going to cover The Monster Squad.
Yay!
Finally. And I'm going to be anxious to like do a full episode on The Monster Squad, but okay, we'll dive in. Okay, so we're coming back from Thanksgiving break. I watched a lot of horror movies, incidentally, with my parents. Some of those were awkward. Like,
which is unusual. Your parents are not horror fans,
my
really?
Mom actually, surprisingly, listened to the podcast.
I knew she listened, yeah.
And occasionally does, like, back when we were talking about Snowtown Murder, she was like, I watched that movie you talked about, the Australian one, and I was like, Snowtown Murder? She's like, yeah, there was. That was a long rape scene.
She's like, Mindy's crazy.
I watched The Hills Have Eyes remake with them, which, again, involves some rape and a really creepy breastfeeding of an adult mutated man, which, yeah, I had to look away from the screen and my parents.
I'm excited to talk about that.
but I did get to watch Blackula, and thank you to the Dunedin Public Library for having Blackula and Scream Blackula Scream.
Of course.
Okay, so we'll jump into Blackula. 1972, This was kind of meant to like start off the blaxploitation horror subgenre, but it seems like it never really picked up traction.
Right.
I mean, in all fairness, the movie's not great, so it's not exactly a tentpole. But okay, so it was directed by William Crane, who before this had directed episodes of The Mod Squad. And that's kind of where the movie's limited. Like, it is very much of the era. It doesn't work outside of early 70s.
No. But I don't think it's supposed to. It's supposed to be this is what we have to work with at this point in time.
It kind of ebbs and flows between, like, William Marshall, he's Blackula. He's initially Prince Mamuwalde.
Very good.
So he sort of wanted the writers to give his character a little more polish, and so they made him this African prince who is actually in Transylvania arguing for slave rights.
Fair enough. All right.
Almost two centuries ago, the ruling elders of my people sent me, yes, and my bride to Europe on a mission to protest the slave trade.
The slave trade?
On that mission, I myself was enslaved. My wife murdered, and I was placed under the curse of the undead. Our assassin was the vampire, Count Dracula.
Count Dracula is a myth. He wasn't real.
Oh, yes, he was real. As real as I am now. As real as you are. And my need for you. You are my louver recreated.
Yeah, shit goes down, and he curses him. It's actually Dracula who deems him Blackula.
Oh, that was nice
Which,
of him.
That's like Mario deciding, it's like, you're my nemesis. I will call you Wario.
Exactly. That's an M upside down, everybody. But Dracula's like, Blackula sounds great.
Dracula, not known for his creativity.
And if I was the prince, I would be like, really? That's what you've come up with?
I curse you with my name. You shall be Blackula. Vampire, like myself.
Yeah, sadly, he was already in the coffin. He was, like, trapped for the, you know, eternity. That was kind of the thing. He was meant to be turned and then spend eternity in the coffin knowing that he failed in saving his woman.
Fair enough.
But he gets out because we do get introduced to a biracial gay couple.
Which, this is what I'm always, when I think of Blackula, I always remember this when it opens up in the modern day with a biracial gay couple. And in 1972, that's insane.
It is very progressive.
Right?
Not the most subtle of characters or performances. They are like flamboyantly in Transylvania respectful. Looking for antiques.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, the disrespect comes later when anyone references them. Holy shit.
Does it look organized? There's been a lot of panther activity lately.
Panthers? Come on, Jack, don't cop out. Two faggot interior decorators and a lady cab driver. Panthers? Oh, come on.
Anything is possible.
And like, yeah, he's fighting for them. The very next words out of his mouth, they're just like, it's the F word. And I mean, you can't win them all. Blackula is not the most progressive piece of work, but okay.
So I think it's interesting though that they're having this argument about the police and messy police work.
Strange how so many sloppy police jobs involve black victims.
You're getting paranoid. Shaver wasn't black.
Yeah, it's almost...
And it's 1972.
Poignant.
We've kind of moved a lot of years since
then. It's just a lateral move.
Yeah, exactly.
The wardrobe in the movie is... I don't know. I would have to ask my parents if... And again, this is 1972 in LA. So I imagine the sort of clothes and fashion are a little different from the East Coast from like what my dad would recognize, but it seemed very even flamboyant for the time.
Yeah.
And it's funny, by that measure, when Blackula comes out of his coffin, you know, in 1970s, he actually looks pretty like downplayed.
Yeah, like Liberace is kind of like your average Joe.
Yeah. That's why for years people were just like, oh, he's like fancy. But that's the last thought they gave that. So Blackula wears like a blue silk shirt with big flamboyant bow tie and a cape.
Of course.
And because it's the 70s, no one thinks twice. Actually, one character is obsessed with him and that goddamn cape and wants it from him.
Where can I buy a cape like this?
So one of the dynamics I really did like is that they do try and couch it in reality where the main cop, you know, he's seen horror movies. Mm-hmm. He knows what two puncture wounds on the neck means.
Which is good because, you know, always in zombie movies, it's like a brand new fucking thing.
Yeah, it's a pet peeve when they kind of pretend that, like, culture is evolved without these things.
Right.
Like, we live in a bubble.
So, like, in vampires, usually, that's... They reference.
Telltale.
They're like, we know this is a vampire.
Yeah. And so he, being a cop who's going to have evidence in case he wants to, you know, charge Blackula with a crime, he does his fair share of, like, due diligence. And even when he wants to exhume the body of one of the first victims, I guess the white guy of the biracial couple.
You're nuts. You know what I've got to do to get your permission to dig up a grave? Besides... You got something you don't want me to have, and I don't like it.
I just don't have it all together, Jack. If I told you my crazy idea, you'd just laugh at me.
But so he needs hard evidence, and it actually reminded me that it's a long shot, but the movie Fallen with Denzel Washington.
Okay, where are we going?
Well, Denzel Washington is a pragmatic Philadelphia cop who has a very hard time getting his head around the idea that there is a spirit and or demon who inhabits people by touch.
Okay.
And when he finally does, like, he recognizes that, like, there's no trying this man for crimes.
Right,
like, it's not going to work. So he has to find alternate means. So the cop in this case, same deal. But he knows the rules of vampires. So he knows that in the daytime, I got to find this dude's coffin and take care of
him. Right.
So that, I don't know, that was kind of interesting. But I don't know. Blackula or Prince Mamuwalde. I keep doing that. Prince Mamuwalde is very, like, prim and proper, but you have to remember he's coming to this from, like, 200 years ago, so that anybody doesn't think his behavior is conspicuous is really sidestepping that whole argument. Even stranger, you're not sure if he's putting on the hypnotized eyes to get Tina, but that he sees this woman who is, like, the reincarnated beauty that
always,
he left behind.
It's always the case.
He's smitten and obsessed with her. I mean, he just happened to wind up in L.A. where this person lives. I mean, what are the odds?
Well, you know, when you're destined like that.
I guess it is fate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the odd thing is his want to be with her forever, she seems game. So, like,
oh, really?
With the exception of his side murders, like, if he had just skipped to the part where he's after her, like, they might have lived happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
Except he's a 200-year-old guy who, in theory, shouldn't even speak English.
Right. But he's seeming to do a great job.
And he's obsessed with her, but like the moment they're together, and they do get together, like they sleep together. She's not even a vampire. He hasn't turned her.
Huh.
It's bizarre. I don't know. I'm just picturing a very like a moment like out of the end of The Graduate where they're just on a bus together, shoulder to shoulder, not really talking. They're just like,
you're like, this is awkward.
Yeah. So what do you want to do? I don't know. See a movie? Oh, okay. What's a movie?
Yeah, right.
He's 200 years old.
Yeah.
Yes. So Blackula, it was fun. There's some great music numbers. A lot of it takes place in a club.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of neat.
I'm believing that most of anything that happened in the 70s took place in a club.
A noisy, smoky, drinky R&B club.
Right. Or then occasionally like, people would like disco dance and everyone would do all the dances.
Yeah.
And then like if you're not there, as far as movies have told me about the 70s, if you're not in the club, you're probably in a diner.
Or a dark street.
Dark street or a police station. Everyone loved to be in a police station in the 70s.
Yeah, a lot of this takes place in the police station and the coroner's office. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a new place I didn't know existed in the 70s because I wasn't shown that through other films.
Yeah, this coroner's office is really like a single serve where there's like a walk-in freezer with one person in it at a time. Yeah, for what that's worth.
In L.A., good.
But yeah, so it was followed up by Scream, Blackula Scream, starring Pam Grier. And later, I couldn't speak to this, but there is Blackenstein.
See, in the way, like, for our listeners, we have notes that we try and stick with, but they, like, meander off. This said, followed up by Scream, Blackula Scream, starring Pam Grier and Blackenstein. And I was like, is there an actor apparently calling themselves Blackenstein who was a co-star with Pam Grier? How Darren wrote the notes up for this.
He was fated for that role. Yes, there should have been a comma there.
Darren doesn't believe an Oxford comma. Yeah,
I do. That was a typo.
I was like, that's an interesting that actor took the character too far.
Okay.
Let it begin.
The Monster Squad.
Yes.
You almost as like a gift, you came in today telling me that you finally saw it. And the way you were with Rocky Horror Picture Show in the sort of reverent way you treated that movie. Mm-hmm. Now this is the Monster Squad for me.
That's crazy. I mean, not that it's not good or deserving of it. It's just like
anything short of superlative compliments out of you, I will consider blasphemy.
No, I loved it. I had never seen it. And my husband knew all the words and could sing all the songs too. And I was like, who are you? Like, how do I know you? Because, I mean, I think it's great and awesome, but I just didn't grow up with this. And he was like, why didn't you watch this? As a kid, you should have loved this movie.
Yeah, this was one of those that I think HBO played a ton on rotation, and that's where I would have seen it. And I'm sure we taped it from HBO, and I wore that out.
I never watched it. I mean, I think I was busy. It's 1987. I was probably still watching Fright Night. Honestly, I was probably just on a loop Fright
Night.
In deep
rotation.
Yeah, exactly. I was a small, small child. But I loved it. It was written by Shane Black, who also wrote Lethal Weapon, Predator.
Who made my childhood.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. And more recently, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Iron Man 3, which people joke is Kiss Kiss Clang Clang because he wrote and directed that. And it's very Robert Downey Jr. with voiceover.
I don't like that joke. Don't say that joke.
Kiss, kiss, clang, clang.
That's stupid.
All right. It was an event horizon.
Screw you. That shit's hilarious.
So it was directed by Fred Decker. The two of them, Shane Black and Fred Decker, Black and Decker, went to UCLA together. And I remember hearing that they wrote this when they were still in college. But Fred Decker went on to write the horror comedy House, as well as 5 episodes of Tales from the Crypt, and he directed one of those. So, yeah. I mean, they make a pretty great team.
Yeah, they do. I mean, House is like a really, like, boy, do I hate that series of films. But
yeah,
I'll let it go.
My memory, I haven't seen them since I was a kid.
I watched it about 6 months ago, maybe.
Sounds like they don't hold up.
It was really bad. I was like, what is this? Why did I like this? I don't know. I don't know, but I did like Monster Squad. There were so many things that I think having done a couple of months ago when we did Universal, watching Monster Squad after knowing all the Universal things. It was so awesome and so much fun. And I think if I was a little kid, I would have been like, oh my God, these are jokes just for me.
Yeah.
This is amazing. This is the best thing ever. I kind of, what did I say here? I love the armadillos throwback, obviously.
Yeah. In the Transylvanian basement that is Dracula's castle's, ground floor were armadillos. And so they make an appearance here.
And even the plane that they're driving.
We should specify 1931's Dracula, the original Universal Monsters Dracula.
Right.
With armadillos and a bee or a potato bug.
A potato bug, but it looks like a bee and I don't know. But I kept looking for it though. As the opening scene unfolded, I was like, okay, there's armadillos. Where's the bee?
Show me the bee.
Where is it? And it was not there. And I was a little disappointed, but whatever. But did you notice even the plane when they take the bodies back out of Transylvania and they're flying over, it's like Browning Transfer Company or Browning something, which I assume is Todd Browning.
Todd Browning, sure.
Yeah. So I was like, hey, it's for me. Yeah, it's great. And my husband's like, shut up. I'm watching the movie and singing the songs. No, I don't know. I really liked it. I thought the kids, though, were really bad kids.
What? Wait, would you mean bad behavior or bad actors?
No, bad behavior.
Okay.
Bad behavior because the fat kid gets picked on for being fat and bullied. But
Rest in peace. We found out he died from pneumonia in 1997.
Yeah, it's really sad. He did not live very long.
Horace.
But he's getting bullied and it's really horrible. And then the cool kid comes and saves him, which is
that cool kid served as my model for cool for no kidding, probably a decade.
What was kind of crazy was that banana seat on his bicycle.
Does
really,
it really have a banana seat?
It puts it over the edge of
because it's
coolness.
A front side BMX.
He's got a banana seat.
Okay. He's also got a leather jacket and penny loafers.
So yes.
That was my he was my James Dean. 8-year-old me, that was my James Dean before I knew who James Dean was.
Right, nice. Well, he was very cool, and that banana seat, I will say, really put that over the edge. But then I thought to myself, why didn't they hire one of the Coreys for that? That's a prime Corey role, and they must have tried, and then they said no. They must have.
Yeah, there's not a lot of actors of note. There's a lot of familiar faces in the way of, character actors, and Tom Noonan plays Frankenstein. Yes. I only found that out an hour ago, and it never occurred to me to find out who played Frankenstein's monster. But that was awesome. Okay, so let's give a little bit of a synopsis. So part of this is copied and pasted from the internet, and I'm sort of assembling a storyline out of their very brief description. Dracula is alive. In fact, he plans to rule the world, and that is why he seeks the help of other legendary monsters. However, a bunch of kids regarded by their peers as losers uncover the devious plan and prepare for a counterstrike. That's very vague what the movie is.
That's pretty much the movie. But what I was saying, these kids, they're losers, but then they treat other outsiders as losers as well.
Oh, well, it's a very pure nerd impulse to, the moment you obsess about something, you look at everybody else, you're not into this as much as we're into
this. Right, exactly.
And so, they give a hard time to the cool kid with his entrance exam.
And he's, the coolest kid ever. Why don't you want this kid to be part of your group?
Well, if memory serves, some of the kids do want him in there, but they still insist on quizzing him.
Yeah, that main kid's a dick, and he hates everyone, it seems.
Well, he rules with an iron fist.
Yeah, it's true. He's the one, and he has a shirt in the beginning that says Stephen King rules.
Okay.
That, they made with those press letters that they used to heat transfer onto T-shirts and stuff, which I enjoyed a great deal, and I thought, where can I make one of those for myself?
So there is an amulet made of pure good, and it is seemingly the only thing that could destroy Dracula. So he wants it gone, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And 100 years ago, Van Helsing got it away from Dracula before falling into limbo. This is a horror comedy. We should point that out.
Yes,
that,
it is.
This isn't meant to be, as much as it's grounded in reality, the point is fun.
Yes.
Okay, so the Monster Squad is a society of young preteens who idolize classic monsters and monster movies and hold their meetings in a tree clubhouse.
The clubhouse is fucking awesome as hell, right?
Really cool.
So cool.
Yeah, between the cool kid and the clubhouse, this really shaped what I wanted as a child. So Dracula seeks to obtain the amulet before the Monster Squad does, so he can plunge the world into darkness. To this end, he assembles several of his monstrous allies, the Mummy, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, who they also call Gilman for copyright reasons.
Yeah, why did they do that? Oh, for copyright reasons.
Yeah, it's funny. For as much as this was in homage to the Universal monster movies, they had to change a bunch of stuff for the sake of copyright.
Because I was like, "Why? This is clearly a creature from Black Lagoon. Sure. Why are we calling him Gilman?" I was really confused by that.
Yeah. And incidentally, also, the Wolfman in this is based on the Peter O'Toole's Curse of the Wolfman from 61, I think. The better Wolfman. I mean, the original 1941 Wolfman just looks like they glued barbershop clippings to his face.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have
the weird sisters.
Frankenstein, the Brides of Dracula, yeah, and Frankenstein's monster. The Brides of Dracula, again, like watching these things on loop, huge crush on the Brides of Dracula as a little kid. And like, they were legit scary towards the end. I don't know. I really like those characters.
It's pretty scary. I mean, there are actually real consequences for this horror comedy, family seeming kind of movie. Because one of my favorite character actors who shows up in just like the most random things, he's the other detective, and his name is Stan Shaw.
Okay.
He's the detective. So there's the father of one of these loser kids is a detective, and his partner, seemingly his partner or his boss, I'm not quite sure.
So nobody took the money.
I would have heard them.
Of course he would have. What a stupid question. Did you take him?
No, sir.
Just a shot. Essendale, this case is too hard, man. Let's be firemen instead.
I'm glad you're getting major laughs out of this, Rich.
When this all comes out, it starts with Van Helsing's journal that his mom buys at a yard sale or estate sale. It's a little fuzzy, but the idea is that Van Helsing left the amulet and this diary that explains what it's all about, except it's in German. And these kids don't speak German.
No.
But the scary German guy in the house, like everybody, every neighborhood had that house that like, stay away from it. I don't know if someone lives there, if it's condemned. Sometimes there's a scary dog, like the Sandlot.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, scary German guy occasionally like peeks out from the curtains and terrorizes these kids.
Mom, he's watching us.
Who?
Scary German guy.
Sean, he gives me the creeps. He's just a dude on welfare.
It's the most bizarre thing. So I'm like, that's why I'm going to put it in, because I think it was really funny. When we heard it, we were like, oh my God, that's like such an 80s. There were specific insults that were thrown around in this movie that are not cool.
And even going back to like Blackula and like verbal insensitivities, even like John Hughes' Weird Science, they're throwing around the F word. Right. Like they're okay to shit on. Like it's really, really.
This is actually that it was when you were describing that about Blackula, I was like, oh, wow, that's in Monster Squad. That was like a big word thrown around.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, this is really uncomfortable. Like, I get it, but also like, that's not, you kids suck. More like I was thinking like, what a bunch of assholes.
But it kind of is like a little bite of reality where that's probably how people talked.
Of course.
Because I mean, in the same way that like grandparents are just unmeaningly racist. It's just, it's how they grew up. It's their vocabulary.
Yes.
Speaking to the idea of like what grounded in reality, one of my favorite exchanges was when Horace, aka Fat Kid, they're thanking him for the pie and for
the
translating.
They finally learn that, hey, this old man's useful for this.
At the stroke of midnight, the amulet becomes vulnerable. And at that moment, it can be shattered.
They're not scared of him anymore.
When he becomes useful to them, they endear themselves to him.
Suddenly he's not on welfare.
So he translates their book. He gets them pie. He's the coolest guy ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Horace, on his way out, goes,
man, you sure know a lot about monsters.
Now that you mention it, I suppose I do.
Scary German guy closes the door, revealing a concentration camp number on his arm. And I was like, shit just got real.
Yeah, shit just got really real. And that's it, though. They don't play with it anymore. And I kind of think that was genius.
It was a great piece of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. It's the kind of thing where, like, you know, 99% of kids aren't going to know what they're looking at that point in a movie. But, like, the parent who took their kid to the movies is kind of perking up that, like, well, wow, how's that for grounded in reality?
Right. Yeah, no, that was a great reveal, and great that they don't go back to it. This is just a guy who is now living and...
Yeah, who's seen some shit.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So I had this note, the idea that, and it is very like movie math in terms of how things build up, but this suburban town is the perfect storm in terms of paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm.
So centering around the old house where the amulet is hidden and Van Helsing's old diary is found, the creature from the Black Lagoon is just chilling in their bog. Or
no, he falls down out of the plane.
No, that's Frankenstein's monster. He drops out of the plane. Maybe. And then Dracula kind of...
zooms out of there.
Well, I was going to ask you, did you think Dracula kind of made the creature from the Black Lagoon like a sea monkey?
Maybe.
Because he kind of, he's not there 1 minute, and then he is, and
maybe
he's helping
him. Maybe he just
lives
there all the time. Like, he's been living there.
And
oh,
that's
no,
what
wait.
I'm saying. Yeah. This town is ground zero for creepy monster movie stuff.
Yeah, this doesn't make that much sense. I didn't think about that. I just assumed he was, like, hanging out in the box, too.
No, I think he was in the bog. I think that was, it's just, like I said, a coincidence. This suburban town, everything kind of magically happened in this town. Although, I mean, if it was another town, maybe a different monster squad is sort of facing off the end of the world.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It would have sucked if it was
it.
Like a rich kid's town, but I like that these kids are just kind of the Goonies.
I mean, they're pretty nice. Like, the dad has a good job of the one kid, so, like, they're not poor.
Yeah. Yeah, and the mom has silver, like yes. old family silver, which they melt down in woodshop class.
Which would piss me off because I have like a thing about getting silver from, like in like my family's tradition.
Yeah,
the oldest boy gets the silver, the family silverware, and we have silver from my family for generations.
Oh, so you're okay.
And I didn't get it because I'm a girl, and so like I have like such a thing.
Oh, you have male cousins who received it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, so it's not so much that they're melting down family heirlooms, it's that it only goes to the men?
That's what makes me mad. No, I'm mad because I wouldn't melt that down. I would have treasured that. I would have treasured that silver, goddammit.
Well, without that silver, the Wolfman would still be running around today.
Well, I felt bad for Wolfman because he seemed to be a good guy.
I thought his might be the best version of the Wolfman I've seen. In all fairness, I've only seen bits and pieces of the newer Wolfman. This guy, character actor Carl Theibault, who is a familiar name, but apparently he's not been in that much stuff. But in playing like the sort of tragic, cursed character.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, and he's one of the great, when he's in the police station mm-hmm. and he's telling them, he's like, for your own sake, lock me up. And they're
the
just
police,
like, shut
up,
drunkie.
They seem to really, not want to do their jobs in this. Because even the two detectives, the dad and Stan Shaw, were just kind of like, fucking around the whole time.
Just for a knife. You see, it's a full moon. And I'm a werewolf. Take it easy. Werewolf, you don't understand. You gotta lock me up. You gotta put me in a cage.
Buddy, I'd like nothing better. Hold on to your band.
Oh, God,
you don't understand. You've got to do anything you say.
Cuffs on him.
I got it.
It is meta in the way that, like, only the kids who are familiar with the movies and the culture are of use. Mm-hmm. The cops are always playing catch-up because they refuse to believe that monsters
exist.
Fair enough. And then you enter the mummy, who, again, perfect timing in this town, is in the museum when Dracula calls upon him.
Yeah, this was a perfect storm.
Yeah.
Really perfect storm of shit. Perfect shit storm is what that was. I want to draw attention, though, to a little issue that I like to call child pornography that was going on in this movie.
Okay.
Rudy is taking pictures of this naked girl without her consent. Doesn't matter if she's 17.
He's a peeping Tom.
Because, yeah, what he's doing is illegal.
Right, but I'm just... Yeah, sure, pornography. Sure.
He's taking these pictures. Actually, Frankenstein's the one who takes actually the naked picture, though. And then they send it to a film developer... And the guy actually develops it.
Oh, yeah. Those photomats seemed way too anonymous.
Yeah. This was very 80s. like do whatever you want, naked pictures, whatever. And then the kid blackmails her with the naked picture so that she'll go along with them.
That's right.
I think 1987 was like a very different world. And I made like some notes about how it was.
And Peeping Tom-ism comes up in Back to the Future again,
yeah.
Where like... Yeah, growing up with these movies as reference, I thought that like any window you look in is going to have a naked woman changing.
Fair enough.
And I was lied to.
Lies, all lies. I thought, like, here's my notes, though, on how 1987, I was there, but I don't know. This was a different world than it is today. Kids were really homophobic, and that was totally okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, these are the days of Eddie Murphy Raw, which is like 55 minutes of gay jokes.
Right. So, I mean, that was seemed to be okay at the time. Film places would develop nude pictures of minors. So there was that.
They were decidedly not art photos. These were photos taken through a window with a long camera lens.
Yeah, like, come on. And then when you find out at the very end, I think in 1987, a thumbs up really held a lot more emotional weight than it holds today.
Yeah, well, right up to Terminator 2.
Because I don't ever give anyone the thumbs up.
No.
I give lots of people like the finger.
I do it and then I pretend to freeze frame. I just hold it and I'm
maybe
like,
I should start.
I'm here for the credits. Until the credits finish rolling, I will be giving this thumbs up. Just now I was giving the thumbs up.
Yeah, I was like, really? This like thumbs up really that like awesome? But I think it was. In 1987, like people were like, yeah, thumbs up, dude.
Last but not least of the monster crew, not the monster squad, but Dracula himself, was played by Duncan Rieger, who beat out a young Liam Neeson for the role.
Really?
And it's funny to think
that... biggest Dracula ever.
I like this Dracula because he scared the shit out of me. And it's funny, it's one of the stories they tell, but there is a point where Dracula has red eyes and scares the hell out of Phoebe after picking her up from her head.
Give me the amulet, you bitch!
Dracula, Duncan Rieger, and Tom Noonan as Frankenstein never broke character on set. And for like the kids' sake... And when they scared Phoebe, that was she was terrified. They only
horrible.
Did that once. Yeah. And he felt terrible about it.
Because
he pulled
out Christopher Lee, like Dracula's out right at that point with red eyes and then like the scary teeth
and
missing.
Just the timing of it, like he was my Dracula for my whole childhood. Like that was the guy. So it's, I don't know. I really have reverence for this role, but I think it's also really funny that that Liam Neeson could have been that Dracula, a young Liam Neeson.
Right. And the crazy kind of casting that I definitely want to mention is the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, yeah.
Is Tom Woodruff Jr., who he did this first, but then after this, he's going to do Pumpkinhead the very next year, I think. And then his main alien in Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he did Resurrection 2, but yeah, okay. Yeah,
and then he also plays like lots of gorillas and things. He's like apparently that maybe
a very
gorillas
physical
is his
actor. He's like Andy
specialty.
Serkis before Andy Serkis.
Exactly. Yeah. But he shows up playing these creatures, and so he was excellent in Creature from Black Lagoon. And you can kind of see it in his posture that he does is a very Pumpkinhead posture.
Yeah, the Creature from the Black Lagoon makeup and costume, and these were done by Stan Winston Studios. I mean, the original is like a brilliant work of design, and this like ups it by adding like texture and really making it this, you know, this very fishy. There's no move to make it anthropomorphic,
right?
And I think that is why it is really scary to look at.
His
close
face
up.
Is great. The only thing I would say that costume. They really made the mistake on the hip leg area, which I think they couldn't maybe figure it out in design.
Okay.
Because the rubber gets like really...
It bunches up?
Yeah. Oh. And I was disappointed in that because it's so beautiful on the top. And I think they really put the effort into the top, into the mask.
Yeah.
And so his like pant part was just like, well, this isn't working. We've already
rubber slacks.
Done the entire suit. Like, no, sorry.
Creature from the Black Lagoon has some stipulations in his rider. I will only be shot in a medium shot.
Exactly. Please don't show my crotch. But they do, and it sucks.
But yeah, so Monster Squad. I was really happy with how much of it held up. And I don't know, those moments are kind of redeeming where a part of your childhood turns out isn't a piece of garbage.
No, yeah, it was actually really good. And I thought there was so much for the horror fan.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think maybe in 1987, they were thinking like, kids will like this because monsters, who doesn't fucking like that?
And this was still the
parents.
80s where they were comfortable scaring the shit out of kids.
Yeah.
And this is a PG-13 movie where like people are getting exploded.
And there is a scene where one particular monster gets exploded, And it's gory and graphic. And my husband turned, as soon as that happened, he goes, this scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. Because there's all these pieces of monster, like, around.
Yeah, still twitching, still living. They had life in them. Yeah,
that was crazy. I will say, though, I was having, like, a really shit day yesterday. And so then I watched this movie because I wanted to watch something fun. And I will say at the end, and I don't know if it was I was having a rough day or I don't know like what was going on, but I got really sad at the very end when the little girl has to say goodbye to Frankenstein.
Phoebe's relationship with Tom Noonan's Frankenstein
is so touching and so sweet.
And it's funny, but it speaks to like the childlike nature of Frankenstein's monster.
Absolutely.
That all it took was like the blind guy and the bride of Frankenstein. Like all it takes is someone, you know, taking the time to like listen and be nice to.
Yeah.
And she does. And all of a sudden she becomes like the Franken Wrangler.
Exactly. Which I love. One of the first things, and it reminded me like probably of how I was as a kid. When she first brings Frankenstein to the group and she's holding his hand and she's so tiny and he's so big and it's really cute and touching their relationship. And all the boys are scared and she's like,
it's okay, you guys. He's friends with us. Come on, don't be chicken shit.
And it's one of my favorite things I've ever heard. I'll probably insert the clip because I think it's so cute and funny. But at the end, the way that it ends is like so touching and so sad.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the silhouetted scene and it's like maybe it's at the end of a montage or maybe soon after that don't be a chicken shit line. But when the Monster Squad are walking sort of like into the sunset and Frankenstein's towering over all of them, but he's holding her hand.
It's so cute.
It's a gorgeous shot to boot. Yeah. I want to use that for the art for this podcast.
Nice. Yeah. No, I really loved it. And I didn't know what I was missing, I guess.
Yeah, well, now you know. Every time you kind of tease me for referencing this in the context of other good monster movies,
yeah,
there you go.
So now there's some more like 80s comedy horror that I kind of want to talk about. I kind of think maybe we should do an episode about it a little later.
Yeah, absolutely. And horror comedies are definitely coming up in on our list.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. So that's it for this episode of our Lunch Hour Reviews on Blackula and the Monster Squad. As always, we are at Rance Macabre on Twitter and Facebook, and the website is therancemacabre.com. If you found us on iTunes or Stitcher, please drop by and give us a review or share us with someone you know. It makes a huge difference in helping us grow the show, and you know, maybe one day we'll be self-sustaining.
Yay! You've been listening to The Rance Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rance Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com.
This is me, Darren, saying Wolfman has nards.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.
Wolfman's got nards!
Come on!